Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I'm going to continue my Boston theme today with a woman named Anne Brum. I met her several years ago when she came to Arizona with Kelly Tomorrow, who you heard last week. Anne and Kelly have been really some guiding lights for me in Boston and have brought me to Boston. And I'm just about ready to get to go home now, but I wanted to get in this interview, and through them I met several other Reiki masters and students who I hope to interview and continue this Boston Reiki community theme right now. And I'm very touched by the openness of the Boston medical community to Reiki, and it brings up a lot of questions and some controversy, and that is all very good, because I think that for both sides, and I don't want to seem adversarial, but from the medical community and from the Reiki community, we all have things to learn from each other. And I feel like these Reiki masters and Reiki students who are working in this area are like pioneers in forming good relationships, or at least bringing up some really good questions. So, Anne, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis, for having me.
Great. And, of course, I'd love to hear your Reiki story. That's my really most favorite question, of course, for everyone. So could you share your Reiki story for me?
I'd love to. So it kind of starts before what actually brought me to having my first Reiki session. And that was after experiencing the loss of my father in 2002 to cancer. And after having experienced that end of life experience with my father, with the family, with my own emotions, the complexities of it all, of all the experience, it led me to fulfilling a need to develop my relationship with my father in a kind of non-physical way. And to also learn from his experiences, and not to come to an early death as he did at 58 years old. So there was a lot of learning to do and a lot of development that I was choosing to embark on this journey of, so to speak. So I began to experiment and experience different spiritual practices. There's a local spirituality church that would meet once a month, once a week on Sundays, and they would integrate meditation and singing and what they would call hands-on healing, and a form of mediumship. And it just really brought a lot of comfort for my grieving process, and also to develop my understanding of my experience as this human being and this yearning to have this relationship with my father in a non-physical way. So I'm experiencing, I'm experimenting, and I randomly get this email. And it's about this Reiki share that's going on. And I had heard of Reiki practice. I felt as though I somewhat experienced something similar to it at the spirituality church, where they have a portion of it where they practice hands-on healing. And so I got the email. I'm like intrigued. I end up taking the drive down. I'm like, there's this like innocent child, I have like no expectations in a sense as far as Reiki goes, and I get onto the table, and it's Kelly Tomorrow giving me my first Reiki session. I just remember it was a short, it was, you know, short quotation, meaning, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. But after the session, I remember opening my eyes and immediately knew that this was something that I think I was looking for. There was something of a, almost like this completing of a puzzle for me. And, I like, there was just so much that came up for me and knew that this was something that I had been looking for, and it felt right to me, and really wish I had had it when I was experiencing the end of life experience I was having with my father and my family and myself, and really wish that I had this type of support during those times. And I was like, wow, this is it. This is what can bring a lot of peace and comfort, to people who are experiencing what I have experienced. And it doesn't have to be sad and anger and resentment, all this kind of low vibing, you know, descriptive words I could go into, but, I was just really inspired to share this experience and this peaceful approach and support. So that's the gist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love for you to be, well, I guess that you are being thoughtful about your words and so on, but I'd really like to know how it was for you. Like, you talk about your dad and wanting to continue your relationship with him after he died. And I'm just wondering, I know a little bit of you since we know each other and have talked together a little bit, but maybe it would be good to go back to your background and how you and your dad are really connected and why that is, and do you know what I mean?
I feel it. I understand.
Okay.
Okay, so my parents are immigrants from these islands called the Azores of Portugal. All of their siblings and their parents are from these islands called the Azores from Portugal. There was a lot that my parents had to adjust to by kind of almost being transplanted from their familiar people, their culture, their food, their land. So there was a lot of, let's say, I don't know, dysfunction that occurred within the family, and a lot of communication barriers, both through the language of integrating Portuguese in the English language, but also this American culture with this foreign Portuguese culture. So to make like a really long story short, that brought a lot of, like him and I were just butting heads. I just didn't conform to what he was used to with my other siblings, which was like kind of like the snap of the finger and you're at his side, like whatever. Like he was the king of the castle in a way, and I'm using my own words, my own perception of my experience with them. But he was like, you know, he worked, he put food on the table, he put clothes on the back, he gave you a roof over your head, and whatever he was asking you to do, he wanted you to do it. And I was definitely this American style rebelling, like I did not, I was just not conforming to it. So it brought a lot of friction between the both of us. Shortly after, I want to say when I began into high school, and it like we didn't talk for years until his end of life. And then I went to the hospital and I would spend overnights there, and And at the time I was a preschool teacher, so I was like teaching during the day, and then I would spend time with my father and my mother who was in the room and supporting him to, I don't know, feel at peace and advocate for his care too with the healthcare staff there. So, but in the meantime, like before all that friction was happening, there was a lot of cultural experiences that just was natural for us to engage in. So in the Azores, there's a lot of cultural feasts, and there's a lot of like folk dance, and they share their story through music and singing and through dance. So my younger sister and I would participate in this kind of, like, there's Portuguese American clubs throughout Boston, Somerville, Cambridge, locally to me in Stoughton, which many of them, my father and his brothers were founding members of these Portuguese clubs. So we would get together, we would practice, and then we would perform at different Portuguese American feasts or celebrations of, could be, typically it's after a saint, or the Holy Ghost is a very typical one. So there's singing, there's dancing, and we would practice together. So I did, you know, there was like this kind of like nonverbal understanding of like this love and admiration I ultimately did end up seeing from my parents, and the courage that they have, for leaving what they knew and coming over here and being so, open to trying something else out and, something that they thought could be providing a better life for their family. And I mean, my father too would what they called sponsor other family members to come into the States and help facilitate getting their citizenship and get a job and give them a place to live. And
wow.
And my father would do a lot of fundraising at American, Portuguese American clubs, and, you know, just kind of being immersed in the culture and seeing it all. There was just a sense of understanding of this support that occurs within a community. And that's definitely been ingrained in me. So no matter how much I disagreed with perhaps my father's ideals in what a daughter, should conform to, you know, ultimately we came together at the end, and the support and the love and the care was there. It was like, it wasn't even to be thought about. It was just like a switch. It was like on.
Yeah. You
know? So.
Wonderful. Thank
that's
you.
That's kind of the background of it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because it puts everything that you said into a really different light for me anyway. Okay. And a really good one. You know, it's like I get a feeling for the energy behind your words, and that's great. Thanks. Yeah. So you got your Reiki treatment from Kelly.
Yeah, I got my Reiki treatment from Kelly.
And then what?
And then I'm like, this like, it was an experience that was like, it was gentle, but very deep and profound. And it was like this awakening for me. And I knew right then I wanted to learn how to do this. It was just like this calling. I was like, oh, this is it. I want to learn how to do this. So, I get up from the Reiki table and I get a hug from Kelly, and I walk out kind of still feeling like I'm on like a set of clouds gently carrying me to my car and floating me on home. And I was just so moved by it. So I'm like, okay, well, this is who I want to learn from Reiki, from Kelly as my Reiki teacher. And then I ended up signing up for my class, and I think it was late 2008. So, So here we go, late 2008. I signed up for the class, took first degree, and, you know, I was receiving benefits from it. There was just such this enthusiastic kind of feeling I had about it. It was like almost like having a new baby. Not that I have a baby, but, or have been a mother, but it was like the sense I got, like, oh, I got this like gift and I like wanted to share and
yes,
bring it to those who I really loved and care about. And
yes,
I was still trying to learn how to, put words to this joy that I found in the experience that I was having. And, so I kind of got some googly eyes for it, but most of my friends and family know me and know that, you know, I have good intentions and what I have, like, I come from a place of integrity and they know that, you know, I'm not going to share anything just for the heck of it. It's because like it really did touch me in some deep level and I just want to share.
Right.
So then I went on to second degree shortly thereafter and after second degree, I ended up, taking this month long intern, like unofficial, but official internship in New Mexico, building these, self-sustaining homes called Earthships, where they use, it's a lots of awesome technology, passive solar energy, geothermal. They use recycled materials. They use south-facing side, where they position the, a home, the dwelling, where the it's facing the south of the sun and gets the most sun out of the day. And
uh-huh.
It was a lot of fun. We got to experience a lot, make connections with people all over the world. So I was in this in New Mexico, in Taos of all places, which for me felt very spiritual, and I was able to practice Reiki and practice the way I was, I guess, learning the language of the experience. Like, how do I get this Reiki language out there with these people who are, a lot of them are from all over the world, from Scotland to Australia to, to New York City to Colombia to Chile. So I was happy to have an opportunity to express and share something like Reiki practice with them. So that second degree. And, can I share a quick story about that?
Oh yeah, please do. That'd be great.
Okay. So half the time in New Mexico, we spent in Taos and, there's this education kind of facility in Taos.
Right.
This Earthship. And, so we're helping like kind of, they were in the beginning stages of building that, so we're, you know, digging in the dirt and, you know, pounding tires and all this awesome stuff. And then we took a 5-hour drive down to southwest New Mexico, close to Roswell. I believe it's called like the Sacramento Mountain area. And we got to actually be there from the very beginning of building one of these Earthships. And we got to stay in this beautiful home, and it was in this woman next door named Georgia, came. She also lived in an Earthship, and she would make breakfast for the crew and I. And, that was wonderful. I got to connect with her more deeply. And, there was this one morning where I was helping her prepare breakfast, and she was very receptive to a Reiki session and, you know, was open to, and she said, you know, I would love to have a Reiki session. And I said, I would love to share that with you. So, I'll kind of set the stage. Here we are in this, her Earthship place, her home. And, she's sitting comfortably in her couch, and I'm looking out this window and I see like these beautiful mountains and this beautiful scenery, and I'm just really feeling engaged in my practice and just like feeling really present. And I go through placing my hands on her head and her shoulders, and on her upper chest and her back. And after the session is done, she just peacefully opens up her eyes and she just says, thank you. You know, and that was enough for me anyways. I didn't need to know, like, oh, what did you experience? Did you see anything? Did you feel anything? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it wasn't about that for me. I saw it without words that she really benefited from the session. And I was happy to have someone to practice with. So, and then I have one more story about that too. So while we're in that southern part of New Mexico, we would have breaks. The crew and I would have breaks, and a group of us broke apart and we went to go hike up on this mountain, which the name of it is forgetting me, but I believe it was about 11,000 feet in elevation. So we parked like pretty close at some summit and then hiked up to the peak. And there was this one girl that, was from Chile and, had experienced some loss in her life, and, meaning like a traumatic death of a close friend or boyfriend or something of something, someone that she loved ended up passing away in a traumatic way. She shared this information with me. And while we're at the peak of this mountain, you know, we kind of looked at each other and I was like, you know, do you want to sample some Reiki? And she's like, yeah. So we separated ourselves from the group. And this is this little kind of ledge, safe ledge here. I could just, this like, and we're at the top, but there's this little ledge and we go and sit down and you can just kind of envision yourself at the top of a mountain, like nobody around, just feeling the breeze and feeling like so immersed in nature and, feeling so safe in a sense is what I was feeling. And I just started going through hand placements in her head and her shoulders and going through the Reiki session. And, you know, after it's done, she gives me a hug and she's just saying, no, thank you. I really needed that. And I was like, well, thank you. I'm happy to support you and to share the practice with you. Having that experience on the top of the mountain, outside, with the breeze, with this, like, this feeling of, I don't know, like, freedom and support, and it was just really, really special. So there's this common theme of mountains, as you can see, with providing Reiki sessions, and very unusual, but very rich in nature. So that's, so then there was this kind of break between actually in my local community with Reiki practice as a second degree practitioner. Cause then I was in New Mexico for a month and then came back and continued teaming up with Kelly. And, it was initiated as a master with Kelly and, just kind of was on this, momentum of mentorship with Kelly. And, really opening up Reiki practice to the community. And we would hold a number of Reiki shares like every Saturday that'd be open to Reiki practitioners and to the public. And, you know, people would come in and receive Reiki and there was a lot of learning going on. So I really did enjoy and appreciate that. And after I received my master initiation, I knew that, I wanted to continue to share and explore and learn and grow. And I knew that Kelly was volunteering with a local hospice agency that used Reiki practitioners or saw the benefit and appreciated the Reiki practitioners. So I went ahead and, completed the application process, the interview process, the training, and began my service as a hospice volunteer. So, which gave me a great opportunity to learn what it really means to be present with myself, with Reiki practice, and with people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and can you describe what you mean by present? Yeah, if that's possible. Sometimes
sure.
These are intangibles, but it's nice to kind of try to, it's nice to put it to words because I think that we all have a different understanding of it, and it's nice to get yours.
Sure, and I can best describe it as a story. So I get the call that as a hospice volunteer as a Reiki practitioner, I get a call that a patient is actively dying. And I'm available, so I end up going to the facility, and I'm not quite sure what I'm walking into other than knowing that the patient is actively dying. I know that the patient is a female, but I don't know who's going to be there. I don't know, you know, what her, like, terminal illness is. All I know is someone is in need of support, and I have Reiki practice to provide that approach in providing support. So I go to the nursing station. I let them know, like, who I am, who I'm with, and who I'm going to see. And then I go to the room, and I do a nice little knock on the door, and I walk in, and I see that there are 8 to 9 family members sitting around this bed with the patient lying and actively dying. So at that moment, for me, being present was kind of letting go of what I may have thought was what I was walking into, and really kind of assessing the situation as I was, like, taking the steps. It was, like, almost instantaneously was happening. I like to call it, like, you're Johnny on the spot assessing the need, the care, the words, the approach, the body language, how it's all gonna come together.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of almost just, it's almost like a natural state where I introduce myself to everybody. I let them know who I am, that I'm here to see their mom, and that I'm a Reiki practitioner. And, you know, I felt that perhaps the family would benefit from Reiki, some Reiki. And, I asked them, I said, you know, for those who are interested, I will be providing Reiki to mom. Are you interested in receiving Reiki? And everyone but one said yes. So that gentleman walks out and slightly closes the door. And here I am with a group of family members who are essentially already in the grieving process of their loved one, and watching her kind of aspirate, like, this process when they're, like, breathing, and there's some, like, in essence, like, gargling that's happening, and there's no machine sounds, just the listening of their loved one breathing on this bed. So I invite them to close their eyes and get comfortable on their chair. And I start engaging in Reiki practice. I start with the hand placements on each of them. And I end up with mom. And I'm engaging in Reiki practice with her. I got my hands on her head and on her shoulders, going down her elbow on her hand. And the family members start opening up their eyes, and there was just this sense of, like, taking a nice deep belly breath. Like, that's the best way I can describe of, like, the difference I felt in the room from the first moment I walked in to after everyone had received support with Reiki session, even though it was modified sampling of it. But there was just a sense of like, and I felt like then they kind of started talking about mom and, and I would ask questions like, you know, who she was as a person and, what did she like to do and what did she, what was her life like? And you could really start to see everyone kind of, again, like easing this tension and supporting this, their mother, their loved one, to have as peaceful as a passing as possible. So that's kind of like by being present with myself, not coming in with this like pre-agenda of, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to put my hands here and, you know, I'm just going to, say what I have to say and then I'm going to excuse myself and leave.
Right.
I had no idea that what was going to take place took place. And I just kind of let Reiki practice, let the Reiki flow take the show.
That's great.
Learned a lot from that experience.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a beautiful story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now you and Kelly are sort of supervising this group of volunteers. And yes?
Yes.
And Kelly went through a lot of the protocol that you all have for, I use the word vetting, but to sort out people who are volunteers and whether or not they are qualified or they really, you know, have a sense about what they want to do with the hospice. And so I don't want to get back into that piece, but I'm wondering if you can, in your observations, share with us all the different layers of benefit that Reiki brings to the hospice care, besides, you know, the actual and obvious hands-on treatment with the family and the patient. Are there other benefits that you as a Reiki practitioner bring to the hospice facility itself?
I feel like there's so much benefit that it's almost immeasurable. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but there's just this sense of like calmness that Reiki practitioners bring into the whole approach of hospice care that we provide. Uh-huh. And this, by, you know, Reiki practitioners, as the volunteers that we have as a Reiki practitioner, I know Kelly had spoken about it, but just this component of taking care of yourself really truly does reflect in the quality of care and the being as available as you possibly can be in your approach as a Reiki practitioner in a hospice setting. So, and not all these patients, like, they need a criteria to be on hospice service, but they're not actively dying. You know, these are patients that, you know, some of them are cognitive and very aware of what's going on and making their own decisions. So I've seen the benefit of Reiki practice being calming and soothing and restorative in a sense, meaning after a session for those patients who are cognitive and verbal, they, you know, open up their eyes afterwards and they're thankful and they seem, they have like a little more like pep to the step in a sense.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also patients that are nonverbal and nonsensical, meaning their cognitive function being able to like, the capability of putting the words that they're thinking and actually talking them is, deteriorated to some degree or most of it. So there's kind of like this nonverbal communication that you end up engaging in and having to, really trust your,
right,
your Reiki practice and why you're, what you're there actually doing for the patient. It's a really interesting, fulfilling role that Reiki practitioners, provide to our whole person approach in hospice care. And we've seen it too at our local hospital. And I know Kelly talked about it as being a part of our pro bono work that we do with them in their, through their integrative care program and providing Reiki in all these different units of the hospital and from like the beginning of life to the end of life and from staff to not only nurses or doctors, but like the cleaning staff or, the administrative staff to, you know, patients and even people who are visiting the hospital. So it's, and then we also, as a Reiki practitioner, raising the awareness of practice, Reiki in, even local universities has been really interesting too. So it's just this kind of huge spectrum of benefits that Reiki practice brings, both that I've seen as a practitioner in like wellness, preventative care to end of life care.
And, it's a kind of interesting expression, actively dying. Did you all come up with that expression or is that something that is a hospice, expression?
That's typically a term that's used in, I guess, a clinical expression, a clinical term that we use for actively dying. Another term we use is transitioning, you know, transitioning. So,
so actively dying, what is, there are physical, conditions that, are present if you, you know, so that it becomes a useful descriptive phrase.
Right. I would say, like they stop all medicine. They stop all feeding, you know, they, in conjunction with their doctors, their primary care and our hospice care, our hospice clinical team, they come to the determination that, this particular patient has had a severe decline and they're no longer benefiting from X, Y, and Z. And X, Y, and Z could be pain management medicine, you know, certain types of clinical care that they feel no longer will support them to be alive, so to speak.
And, you know, through the years, thank you for that. That's really good. And through the years, what I've realized is that, I'd like to think about death as a, and, well, I used to think, well, let me, I'm stuttering. let me back up and start again. In my own process of accepting death, in my own immediate family and also friends, I have, come to this place of wanting to see that, death is another transition like birth. And that, when we use the word transition, it, in some way, it's almost more accurate than the word death. I used to think that transitioning was a kind of euphemism for, the word death or dying or have died. But I realize in my own experience of Reiki that that's exactly what people are doing. They're going through a transition. And I'm wondering if, and so the clinical word becomes death, but, it doesn't mean that they've somehow, it doesn't mean that they've stopped being, they've stopped living or their essence has just ended. And I'm just wondering if you've come in your work with hospice and so on, come to some of your own personal philosophical conclusions to death and transitioning and what actually happens in that moment and so on.
It brings me back to why I started on this road of kind of spiritual development of the death of my father and wanting to continue this relationship with him in a different way. And that's how I still feel about it, that this just, he's in a different space, state, however one wants to describe it, but I continue to develop a relationship with my father, and I feel like I have had a better relationship with him now than I did when he was in, you know, in human form. So I would have really, what I am continuing to see is this understanding of, supporting these individuals at their end of life and, the different experiences I've seen with these individuals that, meaning like specifically at their end of life, their, what they're exhibiting in their behavior. Like some are very quiet, some are moving their head around, and for me appears to be what I would describe as someone's like very afraid, and some are very like physical and wheeling their arms around, some are like sitting up, sitting back. So what I've really as a Reiki practitioner, I really saw and came to understand that, you know, Reiki practice wasn't about this like healing and, you know, keeping you alive and healthy, but that maybe healing was a part of that dying process, that transitioning process. And I was like really understanding that to honor that person's process and journey from one state into the next, and being supportive of it, and in the best way that I knew how to serve through my Reiki hands, through my Reiki practice, that brought me a lot of peace within myself, and I have seen the peace that it's brought to the patients and family members who are watching their family member kind of, you know, passing away. So yeah, it brought up a lot of like, what does healing really mean? And, you know, Reiki practice is not only for keeping you well and improving your well-being, but that it can also be very supportive in the person's journey, wherever they may be at that particular space and time. So, yeah, it's interesting because we have other Reiki practitioners, students of ours, and Reiki volunteers and colleagues, and they, like yesterday, I was just with a volunteer at one of our facilities, and he's asking about, you know, like certain conditions that the patient has and what's their diagnosis. And I just was kind of reminding him that, you know, as a Reiki practitioner and as a hospice volunteer, all that information of the diagnosis and what stage they are at in their illness was like really irrelevant to some degree as far as the service that you're providing here today.
Right, right. Well, that's a good point.
In the most loving, gentle way that I could possibly say it to him, because I could see it in his eyes. He's like, oh my God, look at his feet. And, you know, this particular patient is not receiving blood down to his feet, so there's certain things that happen to the body when you don't get blood flow to it.
Right.
And he's not in the clinical field. So there's a lot that goes on when you're kind of immersed into this culture of clinical care and right. you're used to seeing these things. And that's why I always encouraging him to him. I said, you know, if it's uncomfortable for you at any moment, just, you know, excuse yourself, take a break, and, you know, you can stop at any time and just, you know, and leave, because, you know, you're going to be of no use as a Reiki practitioner, as a volunteer for this patient, if you're consumed within your own mind and trying to think about, like, where to go with Reiki practice and directing something. I was like, it's not about that. It's not about that here today.
Right. Right. That's a really tough one.
Oh yeah. And I've learned it. I'm still learning it. It's still something that, still very much, being aware of it and conscious of it and almost having this constant communication with my mind and my emotions and my practice and being like, this feels right. This doesn't feel right. I'm going to step out. Where is this coming from for me? Like, it's a lot. I have one quick, not quick, but I have a story that really did touch me. And I wanted to it brought up this understanding for me. Like, why am I here? What am I doing? What is this doing? Is this helping? And, I really learned that it was without even words that, I really came to have a sense of appreciation for myself and the commitment of service I was providing in the community.
Uh-huh.
And we're at this local hospital providing Reiki sessions, and it's on this oncology unit. And, this patient was a young male, and I don't know exactly what's going on with him, his condition, but all I know is that when I first knocked on the door and I walked in, the nurse was with the patient, and she was saying, you know, we're just finishing his dressing, like wrapping bandages around all of his extremities. You know, can you come back in just a minute? And I was like, sure. So I'm waiting outside the door, and she comes and gets me, and this patient, this young male, is like having, like, I just saw the discomfort and the pain that he was experiencing, and he could like barely even like open up his like mouth and get these words up, but he did say like, can I get more pain medicine? And the nurse said, well, we just gave you pain medicine about a half hour ago. I did put it in the request for the doctor. So, try the Reiki. You know, it may help you. So this patient is, you just imagine like this, seeing this human, all of his arms and legs and torso is all wrapped in bandages. And the only things that were exposed was his hands and his head. So I'm inviting him. I'm like, wherever you're most comfortable to be, either in the bed or the chair. And like he was, the pain that he was, to me, what I understood is his being in pain and like trying to move around and getting in a comfortable place and sitting in the seat. And these are very slow movements that he's making, and with each movement I could really sense the discomfort he was in. But once he got into a comfortable state, you know, I got into giving him his Reiki session, and I was kind of uncomfortable touching all these bandages, meaning, I mean, there's a whole part, we take all these precautions at the hospital. There's like gloves that you put on, and
right.
you have to put on a gown and a mask, and that's all part of this. But it's, so I have my gloves on, but it was just about like, am I going to hurt him by lightly placing my hands? I don't know, you know, what's going on with them. So I was happy to that when I ended the session, and he appeared to be comfortable. I don't even say anything when I feel like when I'm observing that the patient seems to be in a comfortable state or sleeping, that I just kind of walk out. And I would go around providing Reiki sessions on the other units, and I walked back around this patient's room, and I kind of like peeked in, and he was still in his seat, like an hour later, still in that seat, in his position, like in the same, what appeared to me like in the same state that when I had left him. And he had visitors in the room too. So, from first walking in and him being in such a painful state, what appeared to me to be like very uncomfortable and in pain, and what he had said to his nurse and the conversation he had, to still be there resting as comfortably as he possibly could be was such, I just was so thankful to even provide like even a minute of comfort to this young male patient. Not only that, but he kind of looked like a nephew of mine. And I was just like, oh my God, that could be him. And like that really, really, I was like, this is why I'm here. And this is like, I understood for me what I was doing, why I was there, and the service I was providing to this community.
Mm-hmm.
So that really always stays close to my heart, that experience, because he really did look a lot like someone I knew, and it brought up some personal things for me.
Mm-hmm. So that reminds me of another question that I have for you, and we're getting toward the end of the hour, which is just amazing. This is like flown by. When you get really involved, you know, like say you just had this very intense connection with your nephew and it brought up, you know, stuff, then do you have your own protocol? Maybe we might say, and this may be too clinical, but your own way of dealing with that? Do you like excuse yourself? How can you do that without feeling like you're abandoning the person that you're there to treat?
Yeah, that is, so far for me, it's been situational.
Yes.
Like, it's been so individualized
for
that particular moment and person and time and day. There have been times that I have excused myself. For a few minutes, I, you know, get a drink of water. I would splash some water on my upper chest just to kind of cool me down, I guess. just to kind of bring it back in, like ground it back in, hit it up, like what is going on with me to really to get in touch with myself. I would perhaps take a break, and I wouldn't make the visit next week or 2 weeks. Because I was still, for me, like after that particular male patient who reminded me of my nephew and looked like him, you know, I took a couple weeks off from my visits, and, you know, over the 2 weeks, I was like, what is it? Like what is it for me that like it really affected me, meaning like I could not get him out of my mind, and every day, like whenever I was practicing my self-care Reiki, it would bring it up. My Reiki sessions, self-care Reiki has always been an incredible ally for bringing me back to myself, bringing me back to kind of holding this space for me to assimilate and understand the experience and the response I was having to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So excusing myself, taking a break, you know, day, 2 weeks, whatever was needed. Reiki self-care. I was giving myself self-care, even in the community, whether it's at the universities or at a hospital or at hospice or, at a public event, I would excuse myself and one of my favorite hand placements is on my upper chest. And I would just take a few minutes and re-engage in myself and in my practice. And I was like, okay, all right, okay. Is this good? Are you good? You're okay? All right, let's do it, you know? So.
Great.
Different approaches.
Yeah, well, it's good. And I've never heard this expression, although it's fitting. I've never heard the expression of self-care Reiki. And it's an interesting way to express treating yourself. And it just is much more pointed about what the purpose is of that particular treatment, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been so helpful for me.
Yeah. And I understand also from Kelly that you do periodic Reiki, you have like meetings with the Reiki volunteers. And so on, just to check in with people and,
support and connect. And because being a Reiki practitioner can be, whether it's in a hospital, hospice, or in the community, can kind of feel like a little lonely and isolated. And it's always nice to kind of get together, communicate, share, and exchange.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think that was something that, even was lacking for me before I got into, while I was in Reiki practice as a court stenographer for 5 years, I was really missing this human connection and being of service in a more community-based way, not more of like a legal kind of way for attorneys and all that. So, being really this human to human connection was wonderful. And I feel like holding a space for that to continue to happen is like so valuable.
I agree with you. Mm. Thank you, Anne, for your time and your sharing. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Phyllis. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.